Broadcasting from InnieUpMagazine.com and 620 WDAE AM, the sports animal in Tampa Bay, Florida.
With your hosts, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's time to Ante Up. It's August 22nd, 2008, and you're listening to the best poker podcast on the internet. I got an awesome email this week.
From our good friend Joe Navarro.
That's right, Joe Navarro. He wrote a nice opening column for our magazine. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Hey Joe, you want to write again?" And he says, "You know, I want to do something a little different. You know, I want to answer the questions that the Ante Up Nation might have." And I was like, "Well, that's fantastic." So like a Q&A, like an Ask Joe kind of thing. So we're soliciting any questions at all from the Ante Up Nation. If you want to know anything about nonverbal behavior, what it means, what it meant at the table when you were there, you know, try to have him. Or if you have his book and you want to talk about something in his book and ask him something specific about it, he's more than happy to answer the question, and we will print it in our magazine. And if the really good ones, we'll use on the show. So I think Joe is really very gracious here in offering this up. So we want to take advantage of that.
Well, and he loves answering questions too. I mean, we were at the WSOP Academy when he taught there, and then I went back this year to meet him. And as soon as his session was over, it was like, you know, bugs on a light bulb. People were just surrounded him, and he took forever to answer everybody's questions. So this is a great opportunity, I think. So I'm looking forward to what some people write in and some of his answers.
Yeah, I mean, it's not every day that you have someone of this caliber, world class, at your disposal. But I just thought that was fantastic. You know, in that article that he written about for us, he mentioned how Dan Ugranu wears his tells on his face all the time. You know, and so speaking of Dan Ugranu, you know, I think we have a little news to announce.
I told you so. That's the news. That's the news that we're reporting today. Once again, I pick up my sensors, my BS sensors are perfectly in tuned. And a couple weeks ago, we talked on the show about this interview that some European website did with Daniel Grano, where he got a little ticked.
Yeah.
Toss the guy in the pool. And my first reaction was, you know what? That looks staged. And then Chris, of course.
Now, wait a minute.
My very gullible co-host.
Now, wait a minute.
Oh, no. That was real.
Now, wait a minute.
When he threw Doyle Brunson's name in, that's when I knew it was real.
Now,
it turns out now that Daniel Grano on his blog said, I love these comments because that was totally staged.
Yeah. All right.
Who wins?
Now,
thank you.
You said at first, I did the same thing. At first, I said I thought it was fake. But then when he started saying bro and he brought up Doyle Brunson, that's when I said I questioned whether or not it was fake.
Yeah.
So all I thought it might have been real. So, yeah,
hey,
all right.
The
so
proof is on the tape. People can go back 2 weeks ago. They can hear what they heard.
So it was fake. It was fake. Whatever. I know what you and Daniel and Negreanu have in common, though. You both don't iron your shirts.
No, we don't. he's busy. I'm busier. So...
All right, well, from one guy getting thrown into a pool to another guy who voluntarily dives into a pool, Michael Phelps, man. Turns out the man is a rounder. He loves to play poker.
Exactly. He's won, 27 gold medals this year. And eats. And my wife loves this. 12,000 calories a day.
That's sick. I saw that in the paper about how much he eats a day. It's just ridiculous.
I would love to try to do that, but even as fat as I am, I couldn't get that much food in my gullet every day.
I mean, he eats like a 12-egg omelet and then washes it down with stuffed pork chops. I mean, that is just the sickest thing ever. The meals this guy eats are sick. But look back to the poker. He says that's his passion.
Yeah, and the problem is he's probably not going to get very good meals at the WSOP at the prices they charge for food out there. So, but yeah, he wants to. He says in the quote after winning his 18th medal this year that he really would like to play in the World Series of Poker next year.
Yeah, I think he also mentioned the World Poker Tour too. I think he just loves to make. He wants to play the big time. He wants to give it a shot. You know, and I can just imagine what they're going to say to him around the table now too. You know, you're a fish in the pool and at the table. Or, hey, come on in, the water's warm. You may be a little swimmer, but we're sharks. I mean, they can just imagine the stuff he's going to get at the table.
Well, yeah, the thing I love about these things, too, is these big world-class athletes and actors and these people that, you know, are at the top of the game in their arena, then they come into our arena.
Yeah.
I mean, well, it's not really our arena.
It's definitely not your arena.
But, you know, hey, I can play poker because I played at home. It's different.
Yeah, it's not the same.
But that's great. We'd love to see him in next year. And
I would love to see him at the World Series.
See him take a bath.
Yeah, absolutely. Take a bath. Well, speaking of taking a bath and of China, Chan Poker shut down this week.
Yeah, bummer.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't for the Americans anyway, but, you know, we were hoping that he'd stick around until the madness at Capitol Hill settled down and then, you know, could offer to have him come back again. Got that email this week. And one of the things I thought was interesting in there, they left a quote that says, "We are actively seeking a partner to provide poker software and honor all Chan Poker players' point balances for those that wish to continue playing online poker. We will keep you informed of developments on this front." What does that mean, Scott?
Well, I think they're probably looking for another site, like maybe a Full Tilt or PokerStars, to adopt the orphan Chan Poker players and let them carry their points over and things like that. I think that's happened before. I think that's probably what it is.
I think Doyle's Room did that in the beginning, right?
Yeah, when they left the U.S. and then they came back.
Okay. So anyway, that's real sad news.
But yeah, and tough climate out there.
Yeah, and continue that too. The World Poker Tour today announced that they were warned by the NASDAQ that if they're or stock doesn't get above a dollar for the over the next 180 days, and it has to stay at a dollar or more for 10 consecutive days, that they're going to lose their standing on the NASDAQ. So it's just some more bad news from the economy.
Well, and you know what? The really bad news is for cocktail waitresses at Foxwoods, because now you're going to be even less likely to flip them a toke. Because you're going to want to try to save the WPT, buy a stock.
Yeah, take that dollar and buy a stock.
But no, WPT is always, you know, a great innovator. We appreciate everything they've done for the sport of poker, and they've just been on tough times now.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that they I hope they get out of this, you know, and rally somehow. And I remember too, I think it was a year or two ago, people had said that was the stock to buy because they had all these grand plans and European plans and everything, and it just didn't work out. Maybe now's the time to stock to buy, you know, maybe to get it above a dollar, you know, and then maybe it does take off again, and then you made a good investment. But don't listen to me. I'm just
yeah, that's true. I mean, there is no Antioch boiler room going on here. It's not like we bought up a bunch of
we don't know.
We're not that savvy.
No, we found out about it today. I didn't have time to talk to my broker just yet.
Well, I'm just sad today, Chris.
I know. It's all sad news.
There's more sad news. And, of course, they're putting a big spin on this, and we wish this a lot of luck to the poker tech company, because this is a big deal for them. But for those of us who don't like electronic tables, the Excalibur poker room on the Strip, you know, that big one on the Four Corners there?
I do know.
Closed their poker room this week and are going to be reopening next week with all poker tech electronic tables, 12 of them to be exactly.
Yep. I wonder if they're taking the ones from Mohegan Sun. Yeah. Get them at a bargain rate.
I know there are the ones at the 7-0 Hard Rock that aren't there anymore.
Yeah, that's right.
No, these are the brand new poker tech tables. They just released a new suite of products, I think, in the last couple of weeks, I remember seeing.
Oh, okay.
And the poker room, actually, I should say the floor manager of the Excalibur, who's now overlooking this poker room, and air quotes for those that on this audio show.
Those who aren't watching our vodcast.
Neil Bard says that he's excited to see the turnout when they open the tables, and he's going to try to get some famous poker pros to come help launch the tables.
Man, why would, you know, like, they'll have to get like a Polaris down there to promote it. Come and see the poker tech tables. I just don't get it. I mean, I guess it's because they're saving money, you know, on benefits or whatever, and cutting down on staff. But I mean, when you're in Vegas, you're not going to go to play poker tech. I mean, you're just not. You're in Vegas. That's the whole point of being there. I mean, unless people want to play poker and don't want to be intimidated.
Well, I think that's the thing. I mean, the reason a lot of people play at the slots and in video poker is because you don't have a dealer there. You don't have some cranky guy in the six seats, you know, telling you not to talk about your hands.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the other side of the coin is this is maybe a way to get people into our game that they're going to play in a non-threatening environment, and then decide they actually want to jump in and go across the street to Luxor or something like that and get into a real live game. So
it just sounds, you know, to me, it sounds like it's not going to be a successful venture, especially when you're in Vegas. If you're like a single casino and there isn't another casino for anywhere to be seen, that's something that might succeed, but I don't think that this is gonna really do very well.
Well, and the other thing, too, is they say they're going to do cash games and tournaments on it, too. And, you know, one of the advantages of playing online poker now is you can get some of these rare games that we like to talk about on this show that aren't being spread in casinos. I don't know whether that'll happen because they only have 12 tables there. But, you know, they're going to have different levels there. So
right. Well, at least there's a ray of hope with the PPA.
Yes, you know, they've been really stepping up their efforts lately. Of course, it's a big election year, so there's no doubt the reason why. But they're working both parties. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're probably working, like, the National Labor Party, too. We just haven't heard that. But the Democratic Convention's coming up, and they are going to be hosting a Ben Affleck charity poker tournament during the convention out there.
That is pretty awesome. You think Obama will sit down?
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
He loves to play cards.
You know, and the other thing I read today, too, is, you know who just endorsed Barack Obama?
No, who?
Representative Jim Leach, who lost his job last year after pushing that very insane gambling legislation.
Wow.
Unfortunate. but the PPA is also working on the Republican side. They got a big, they flooded the internet message board at the GOP platform 2008.com. with comments encouraging the GOP to take a better look at the poker legislation.
Excellent.
And here's a great quote that World Series Poker Champion Greg Raymer and PPA representative put on there. He says, "My point is simple. Is the Republican Party no longer the party of personal freedom and individual responsibility?" Cue the music. "Why is this party that used to protect my rights now become the party that wants to create a nanny state? Stay away from the issues of personal liberty except to remove old laws that restrict these liberties."
Mm.
See, I'm standing up now.
Yeah.
Of course, I've been standing up the whole time.
Put your hand on your heart.
The flag's waving. But, but you know, let's hope something comes out. I mean, obviously, the presidential candidates we've talked about before aren't going to say anything on poker. It's not an issue that really lends itself well to getting yourself elected. But let's hope the back channels will work and we'll get some of this nonsense cleared up.
Well, from the people who are defending our freedoms to the people who are expressing their freedoms and utilizing their freedoms, we go to Apes. Apes is coming up. I'm pretty excited. I told you I'm going to cash in this one. And it's a Stud 8 event. So You know how I love that. I've been playing Stud 8 a lot lately just to get ready for it. So it's going to be August 28th at 9 p.m. on Full Tilt Poker, one of the ones that are doing the good fight for us. and the password's Annie Up. And all one word. And, of course, the price is $5 plus 50 cents. So come on out, come one, come all, and try to take my money.
And we'll see you Thursday night, and we'll get a banana.
Yeah, who's going to get the banana? I don't think we've been sending bananas out.
Yeah, we need to get on that.
Yeah, get down.
Yeah. We're ridiculous.
Yeah, well, we you know what it is? We have a... I think we're going to come up with a new design for the banana.
Ah, that's
so
it.
I'm squeezing
it's
my
in the
time,
shop now.
Know? Yeah, I'm trying to work on that. But we're going to have something for you soon. Don't worry.
All right, so the bananas will be coming.
All right, well, there are a lot of phones in this room, but none of them are ringing because, you know why? Because the hotline is dominating. It's taken over. Of course, our hotline is brought to you by DB Dealer, and today, this guy's upset, and understandably. So let's hear what he has to say.
Hey, guys, how you doing? This is Steven from New Jersey. Listen, I just finished watching the $50,000 horse event on ESPN, and I'll tell you what. I'm almost embarrassed to tell people I play poker. It is just seeing Scotty Wynn's actions. That is the most. That was the most disgraceful, despicable, untasteful display of sportsmanship I've ever seen in my life. First of all, I'm surprised that ESPN even showed it. I know maybe it makes good television, but that has given another black eye to poker players. Second of all, Scotty Wynn should be ashamed of himself. To act like that in an event that's in the name of one of the nicest, most generous people in poker there ever was. I tell you what, I was disgusted.
Okay, so you didn't watch this, right?
No, I was sadly busy that night, but I feel like I've watched it because people are talking about this everywhere.
Yes.
And wow.
I think that this is a topic for another show, Drinking at the Table.
I applaud that, actually.
He just went off when they didn't bring the cocktails to him yet. He's like, this is the $50,000 K, you know, this is ridiculous, where am I effing, you know. And, I mean, he had more beeps than an alarm clock. I mean, it was ridiculous. And he just would not let go of DeMichele, the Michael DeMichele. And let's not get into the whole DeMichele, DeMichele thing, because you know, I totally agree. It should be DeMichele, being an Italian guy, and you know he's grabbing onto his roots. And
I'm all in favor of just calling him D, being a guy that mangles words regularly.
But and you know what? We got a lot of emails about this. We got one from Jason. When he was following it online, back when it was live, he was rooting really hard for Scotty, and he says, "Boy, was I wrong to root for him. He's just a jackass. I used to be a fan of his too." And now, which he says, Eric Lindgren is a class act because during the show, Lindgren you know, Lindgren, first of all, tells the four person to tell Lane, Flack, and the other guys to just cut it out, stop being so obnoxious. And then he doesn't shake Lane Flack's hand at the end when he gets out, knocked out third. And he was defending Scotty the whole time, but as soon as Scotty, turned on him, that was it. He was just like, you know what, I'm not part of Team Scotty anymore. You're doing your thing, I'm doing my thing. And he did. Eric Lindgren went up in my estimation, and he's a hell of a poker player. But you know,
that's high praise from you.
Yeah, I mean, you have to see the show to understand it, really. I mean, you have to watch this episode, so make sure you watch it tomorrow night. And then he says, how do you get that stinking drunk at the final table of one of the two most important tournaments in poker? And that's true, because, you know, when you think about last year, how he totally just blew up, went out just before the final table of the main event like that, and he was set to win the whole thing. And he was so miserable and everything. You would think that when he gets this close that he wouldn't do that. I mean, he still won, and maybe he plays better when he's drunk.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, as sad as it is, and really is sad, I mean, people do certain things better when they're drunk. So maybe that's the case with Scotty. Maybe he focuses more, or he's more looser at the table. He's obviously looser at the table when he's drinking, and maybe that's what he needs to be successful.
Man, and you should have seen him slow roll Barry Greenstein. There's a slow roll moment where it was just ridiculous.
Those always go over well.
Oh, man, it's Barry Greenstein, one of the classiest guys in poker. And how can you do that to him? You know, it's just like, he says, either it's a two pair or three of a kind, baby, and then he shows him, and it was three of a kind. And it was like a total slow roll. But, yeah, it was brutal, and thanks for calling in. And so if you give us your address, the nice folks at DB Dealer are going to send you a deck of their plastic playing card.
And everybody else can get in on the action, 813-448-1120.
I was going to say that.
No, you weren't.
I have it right here.
Yeah, you weren't.
You're going to you just cut me off again.
Well, you can say it again.
Expect some nasty emails from Phyllis.
Ooh, I haven't got any lately.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery, the case of the edge of the knife. It's level 2 in a two-table multi-table tournament. We have a far lower solid image than we are accustomed to and still have about an average stack size. We'll be on the button for this hand and have not played any big pots. Blinds are 50 and 100, and we have about 3,100 in chips.
Something is different about this case, but I'll get to the bottom of it. Don't you worry, sir.
It folds to the person in mid-position, who makes it 350 to go.
It's just business as usual, sir.
It comes to me in the button, and I am expecting the blinds to fold. I decide it's early, and I am not afraid to call from position and hope to disguise the strength of my hand. So I make a call. After a short delay, the small blind raises to 600.
Hey, Lieutenant, maybe you should go play somewhere else, huh?
The big blind folds, the mid-position delays and folds, and now we're back at me with the ace of hearts and the king of diamonds. I'm going to request time here and think about it. So here it is, 1,400 in the pot, and the action is to me. It's 300 to call, and he has me covered.
How do you want to play this?
I hate ace-king.
Yeah, you know, I checked on the forum to see what the reaction was there. Some people felt that the min-raise, which they were like, you know, Columbo getting his taste of his own medicine. But a lot of them said it screamed big pair. And then a lot of them said shove. That at this point, you maybe can get him to fold, or you may be just in a race, or maybe have the guy dominated. So it was kind of a mixed bag on forum. I think that we're behind here, but it probably is a coin flip. So I think you agree with that.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's listen to part two.
Welcome back. Well, I decide to come in guns blazing. Even though I have only 10% of my chips in, ace-king is just too big to fold to a min-raise when I'm in position. The real question is whether or not we want to play it safe and see the flop, or push now and see all five cards if he calls. Well, I know what Chris would do here. Push. But I typically want to play post-flop with these stack sizes. In a quick moment, however, I decide that there's a good chance he will fold here. I call a big raise from position. Then when given the opportunity to get more money in the pot, I re-raised. I assume this will look like a big hand, and surely he would not want to race me in a level 2 for all his chips with a marginal hand. Despite that, he already has 600 of his 4,000 in there and he's being stubborn. He calls off all his chips, and I am very surprised when he shows tens?
Oh, I don't think he has a lot of respect for your hand there, sir.
I am not too thrilled with my push with Ace King, but I like his call even less.
Do you have any ice to go with this?
Yep, that's a cooler. After a board of five rocks, the tens hold up and I am out of the tournament. As Metallica said, you know it's sad but true. Until next time, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com reminding you to be cautious of the big pots you play when your image is not solid.
Wow, the tens held up. And, you know, I don't fault him for shoving there. I think he's right. I think the other guy could have laid the hand down. You know, and we always bring up this when pocket tens come up on a hand of the week or whatever when Daniel was on the show, and it's just tens. You know what I mean? They're just tens. It's not that really big of a hand. And
I don't remember that interview.
You blocked that out. The therapy is working. All right. So anyway, a good mystery, and we look forward to the next one next week.
Backstage, the girls were playing five cards, stood by the stairs.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet, and you're listening to Annie Up.
Lily had two queens. She was hoping for a third to match her pair.
Do you get enough? Poker, that is. Get in more playing time by buying her a gift card from Red Bamboo MediSpa in Northwood Plaza, Clearwater. Call 727-726-6100 or visit redbamboomedispa.com. The winning cards are gift cards from Red Bamboo MediSpa.
Well, Chris, we got a repeat guest today.
Love those.
Yes, it was like a couple years ago, actually, back when we got started, back in that crappy little office that we were working in up there. We said, let's have a dealer show. Let's bring a dealer on and give us an insight in the world of dealer.
And it was like one of the first times I ever had a guest, too, on the show that was live. And, we've come a long way.
Exactly. So Jenna Phillips, at the time, was working at the Silks up at Tampa Downs, came on and told us all about dealing. And guess what? She's back today as the World Series of Poker Dealer of the Year.
Man, that's remarkable.
She's gone a long way. A lot longer than we have.
Isn't that like a commercial, you've come a long way, baby? Virginia Slims or something like that.
But Jenna, thanks for coming back.
Thank you, guys.
And congratulations on the big award.
Thank you.
All right, well, tell us a little bit about this. How did you end up at the World Series of Poker?
Well, I dealt it in 2006 after I came on here and was working at the Silks. So that was the first year I worked the main event. And then this year in April, I went with my boyfriend overseas. And then afterwards, we decided to work the main event this June. And he was a floor supervisor, and I was just a dealer. And this year, they decided to go ahead and award the dealers this year and give us a prize of Dealer of the Year. And we also had Dealer of the Week and Dealer of the Day. And you got coffees or you got bowling, you know, credits and stuff like that. So, and it was a weekly running, and I just stayed in the lead and took it down.
Now, what was the criteria for that? How did they decide something like that? What's the deal?
Well, how that was done this year was on a voting system through the supervisors. So all the floor supervisors, which there's, I believe, 40 to 60 total through all the different shifts of the main event, they all get a card a day, and they get a vote for their dealer of a day who they believe, you know, has done a good job. Or better yet, if a player's came up and recommended them, then they write a dealer card for that, and then, you know, however many cards you got points for them, and I just had the most points.
So, Chris, cool. You probably didn't give a good evaluation last year to the guy that screwed you, right?
Yeah, no.
Too bad Jenna wasn't at your table, because things would have been much different.
Yeah. I'm sure you didn't hear the story, but no. We went on dinner break for the $1,500 event last year, and when I came back, my chips were gone.
Was the table moved?
No, what happened was there was a big pot with the guy next to me, and they had pulled my chips into his. And so when I got back, the dealer says, you're SOL, pal.
Oh, my God.
And I said, that was the dealer. I said, what?
No, I want a floor.
I said, I want a floor. And they were like, and then the other dealer who was next to him, he asked her what happened. And she said, oh, no, he had no chips. There's no player there.
Oh, my gosh. And that was the lady that dealt it?
The lady who dealt it. And then the guy who sat down told me I was SOL. And then he said, they said they had the button wrong. They had the button wrong by two spots. They had my chips gone.
Yeah, I mean, your chips were gone, so they skipped the button.
It was unbelievable.
Wow.
So it was pretty bad. So yeah, that guy didn't get, I'm sure he didn't get Dealer of the Year.
Yeah, well, this was the first year they decided to do it. And last year I stayed here and I dealt here.
Okay. Well, I'm sure he didn't get it this year then, he was out there. There's
if
just
he
no
came
way.
Back. Welcome back.
I'm hoping he got fired. I wish he got fired right there. That would have been way worth better than cashing in the
It's not McDonald's, man.
It would have been your day.
Well, I'm sure he's serving Happy Meals right now.
So, Jenna, what events did you do? Did you do all of them? Did you get in a rotation?
Yeah, I usually work the swing shift, and so I'd come in and whatever event was going on, which was usually the end of the, you know, the noon event, and then usually there was a 4 p.m. or a 5 p.m. event that started. So I usually dealt in all of those. Sometimes I dealt live cash games. Sometimes I dealt satellites. But I prefer to deal tournaments. I dealt a few final tables, you know, other than the main event final table that's coming up. I dealt the PLO and PLH mixed game final table. I dealt the PLO final table. I dealt the Omaha 8 or better final table. I dealt the triple draw deuce through 7 final table.
Wow.
You know, and those are just a few of them. And some of them are on the ESPN 360. But the only one televised is going to be the one in November. So
all
I'm
right.
excited.
How about the that 8-game mix thing? Did you have any?
Oh, the horse?
The one that's like, it was 8 games. It had horse and then it had like 3 other ones.
Yeah, like the triple draws and the panini and all the games that are never played except for at the main event. No, I didn't actually get a deal with that one. I think I took the day off that day.
That's a smart move because I can just imagine the hell you would have gone through doing that, trying to keep track of 8 games and all the players keeping track. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's pretty much as long as the players leave you alone, you know, and you're a good dealer and you know what you're doing, you're fine. But as soon as those players start stepping in, it starts kind of causing problems because you try to be courteous and nice to them and be like, hey, this is my job. I get paid to do this. Let me do it, please. You know?
So, obviously, you don't do a lot of these different, rare games a lot, right? So, what was the hardest game for you to deal?
I don't know. I mean, I can't say I'm the best at all of them. I'm not, you know what I mean? But I know them all pretty well, and I do pretty well at them. What it is like, Deuce Through 7 and Padoogie is, because it's more of a low ball game, so it's, you know, like Raz and all those games where you're looking for the low hand,
right.
You know? Those are the games that you got to keep reminding yourself over and over in your head, like, okay, I'm not looking for an actual hold'em hand.
Yeah.
You know, I'm actually looking for the worst hand.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, they're just things you got to keep in mind, you know? And as long as you run your game and watch your game, you're pretty much set and good.
Now, you said you went overseas. Was that the EPT event over there?
Yeah, the EPT finale in Monte Carlo, Monaco. My boyfriend, Sean, he was working that as a dealer, and some of our friends were the tournament directors. Well, not the tournament director, but tournament supervisors.
Okay.
So I just went ahead and tagged along.
What was that like?
It was awesome.
Yeah.
We went so many different places. It's ridiculous. Because, I mean, that's pretty much what, like, a lot of the dealers do is, like, you know, we work, and then we like to all have fun. So, like, after the Monte Carlo, a lot of us went to Athens, Greece, and Mykonos, and Santorini, you know, and then back to Dublin, Ireland,
wow.
You know, things like that. And then some of them went to Thailand, you know. I mean, it's just kind of crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So that's essentially what you're doing now. You're traveling and dealing all around the world, right?
Yeah, that's the plan right now. Right now, definitely in the United States and hopefully on the EPT this year.
Yeah, we hear you live in your car.
Yeah, some days when I'm driving across country.
All right, now, I got to say this, Chris, because, you know, we have big egos and we need to be knocked down every once in a while. When Jenna was on the show the first time, I think you probably remember this, one of our questions was, so what do you do when you make a mistake? And Jenna very confidently said, I have never made a mistake. And then we kind of got all smug and go, oh, okay, that's
okay.
Nice.
Yeah,
we'll joke about it later. And now she's dealer of the year. So obviously she knew what she was talking
about.
That's
right. We didn't have to have the polygraph on her. She was telling the truth, apparently.
So how hard is it? I mean, 900 dealers at the WSOP. There's a lot of dealers in town, too. How hard is it to keep your focus through all that and deal without making mistakes? Because obviously you don't make very many mistakes getting this award.
Well, the thing is, I just love to deal. It's a passion. I love the game. I love to deal. I love to play the game, but more or less I like to deal it. I like to run it, you know, and I like a game that is ran well.
Yeah.
And that's my main aspect when I sit down at the table is I want this game to run well, and I want it to run with all the integrity that the game's supposed to have. So a lot of times I don't like, you know, players that, you know, try to break the rules or play the little games and stuff. You know, and those are usually the only times that you're ever going to find mistakes if you stick to your, you know, game and you
right.
know it, you know, is only when these players throw in these, you know, odd valuables, you know, that make you go, okay, wait, now that's never happened before. Now I got to fix it, you know, or hey, hang on, you know, stop doing that, you know.
So let me ask you this. Where were you when you were told this? And was it like a competition where you knew, like, oh, my God, I'm in the final? Like, how did that come down? And did you beat out somebody, like a friend of yours? Or how did that work out?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy because at the World Series, you know, we all have great dealers, you know.
Right.
You got top dealers, and you got some of the new dealers. The greenies is what we call them. Because what people don't understand is They have to staff at least 900 dealers.
Yeah.
There's not 900 dealers, I don't believe, that can just take off their job and come and deal this. They've been dealing for multiple years.
Right.
You know? So with the dealer of the year, I guess this year they decided for all the dealers that keep coming back or, you know, that, you know, love this job and keep doing this,
right,
that they'd give us awards. So they did, like I said, the dealer of the week. I got that the first week. I won dealer of the week and I won dealer of the day like two or three days that week. So what they do is they do the points. So at the end of each week, however many cards you get, you get points for each card or whatever, and it adds up and whoever's in the lead. Well, I was in the lead for like the first week. And then I think the second week, Casey Jones, who's a really excellent dealer, he took the lead in the second week. And then, Michelle Chase, another excellent dealer, she, I think, took the lead in the third week, and then I caught up in the fourth week. You know, but at the whole time, we were all within, like, two or three points of each other.
Wow.
You know, and majority of the time, I was tied with them, but, you know, it's better if they don't just keep giving the dealer of the week to the same person, you know?
So, now, as the competition was going on, were you thinking to yourself, all right, what can I do today? And, like, were you saying to the players at the table, hey, you know, well, I really want to win this watch thing. And,
well,
give me a card, please?
You'd want to, and like I saw so many dealers doing that, you know, like promoting themselves,
yeah.
And be like, hey, you know, this is what's going on. But see, I didn't like to do that because I wanted to win it like straightened out.
You know.
I wanted to win it by, you know, either floor supervisors just watching me and complimenting me after the fact, or by players going up and complimenting me, you know, because everybody knows, come on now, poker players never compliment. I mean, if you even compliment, it's an awesome compliment. You know what I mean? You know, so, I mean, that's pretty much how most of the voting went there. But, you know, I never tried to really solicit votes
because
I didn't think it'd be fair.
So you won it straight up?
Yeah.
All right.
All right, so now you won a beautiful Corum watch, and we understand that they give you a men's watch, but they're getting you a woman's watch, so that'll come soon.
We hope.
You also got to do the famous shuffle up and deal announcement, right?
Yeah, I got to do that one.
Tell us about that.
Well, it was pretty nerve-wracking. First of all, they tricked me because I'm swing shift.
Uh-huh.
So they tell me the night before, you know, when I'm getting off at 1 a.m., oh, we need you to come in tomorrow to deal the final table. You know, so being here to like 11:15 or whatever.
God.
So I get there at like 10:30 and, you know, I'm waiting and they already have their dealers for the final table. And I'm like, what's going on here? You know? And then the dealer coordinators, the DCs, they just kept kind of running me around and I'm like, what is going on? Like, I haven't slept and I'm tired, you know, and I thought I was going to get to deal the final table and now I'm just standing around. And then all of a sudden I'm standing there next to my DC and, you know, Jack Effel and a few other people and Joe Chibata and all of them from Harris Corporation get up on the thing and start announcing. They're like, and our dealer of the year. And then they show me and I'm like, oh my God.
Oh my
so
God.
So they like totally tricked me and surprised me and stuff into
so
doing
cool.
it. And so I wasn't even prepared to say shuffle up and deal. I got up there and I was like, shuffle up and deal. Really quiet, you know? Because in my head, I'm wanting to say, like, in realistically, what everybody wants to say, why don't we shut up and deal, guys? You know, but I couldn't say that over the microphone.
And then, of course, the biggest thing is you to come back in November and be one of four dealers at this new delayed main event. Were people talking about how cool this is going to be that they're moving back to main event?
Yeah, a lot of guys. It's kind of 50-50 is how it kind of seemed like it was this year at the series. You know, you got 50% saying, hey, this is going to be awesome. You know, mainly they're looking at the factor they can get sponsors, they can get all that kind of good stuff, and the factor that all nine players are going to get credit for all the hard work that they did because
right.
this year, what was it, over 6,000, I believe, you know? So, you know, they're finally all nine going to get the credit instead of just the one individual getting
right.
the credit. So,
right.
I mean, that's something that I do like about it. But I think on the dealer aspect, we don't care for it at all, you know, because, I mean, now I got to go from St. Pete back to Las Vegas, you know, which, I mean, it's an honor and I'm happy to do it and it's going to be awesome. But, you know, it's still a little bit of a little difficulty because I have another event that I'm supposed to be working at the time I have to fly up to Vegas.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to take time off there just to go deal this event. And it's 2 days, I believe, is what they're going to try to do.
Are they paying your airfare and...
I mean, that's a... They're going to take care of my room, is what I've been informed of, is that the Rio will put me up in the room and I'll be able to...
God, you think that they would pay your airfare, though. I mean, that's pretty sad. I mean, it's not you saying it, so you're not going to get in trouble. It's me saying it. I'm not going to get in trouble. I just think that, you know, they're making this big deal out of it, spending all this money. And I mean, I can understand if you're a player to come back for millions of dollars, but for a dealer...
Well, they pay. They're. I think they're taking care of the plane tickets for all the players too. In
yeah.
all the rooms.
So you're not. Oh my God.
But, you know, hey, it's
that's
part stuff. Of the business. You know, the dealers get forgotten about sometimes.
It's the dark side of the business. That is just. That's just. I don't know.
It'd be great if they let you get sponsors and have a bunch of sponsors on your show.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm gonna get away from the World Series for a second. Now, when we had you on the show before, they hadn't had the ruling in Florida with the higher limits and everything. And we had always talked to you about the tips and how you're doing well on tips and stuff. How are you doing now since you're, you know, dealer of the year and everything? And how have you done tip-wise, and how have the games changed here for you?
Okay, well, I started, obviously, the limits changed, I believe, what, July 1st this
year? Yeah,
so, and I resigned from where I was working April. So I only had that short period of time. I'd say the tips went up decently, but not what you would think that they'd probably go up with. Okay. I mean, it's just, I mean, anybody in the business knows the higher the pot is and the higher the limits are, the less the tip you're going to get. You know, so a lot of times I'd rather deal the $2 limit game, you know, because it's almost a dollar a hand versus, you know, dealing a 2-5 no limit, a 1-2 or 2-3 no limit, you know, and I'm pushing this guy 800 some odd dollars and he's like, thanks. You know, and I go, okay, you're welcome. You know, and I just smile and I continue on, you know, but I mean, I don't know. I guess they've gone up a little bit, but I wouldn't say extremely a lot.
How about as a player? You play here too, right? So how has that affected your game?
Well, it lets me play more because I don't care for limits. I'm a no limit player.
Right.
You know, I'm a tournament player. So, I mean, cash really doesn't matter to me too much except for when I get knocked out of the tournament. Then I want to go somewhere and play,
right,
you know,
right.
So, and I don't want to leave early. So then I go to cash. So, I mean, it's nice that it's no limit now because now I can actually play a cash game.
Right.
Instead of losing all my money because people want to call 8-4 and I got pocket kings, you know, stuff like that.
All right. So one last question on tournaments and tips too, because we get this question a lot from people. Mm-hmm. There's a new thing now where I don't know how new it is, but it's spreading that a lot of rooms are doing optional dealer tokes at the beginning of the tournament. And then players are now thinking, well, that means I don't have to tip anymore.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, well, I imagine that's probably not a popular view for dealers, right?
Well, yeah, I wasn't obviously in the Florida poker rooms when some of the rooms added that. But I know for like the Silks, where I used to work, that they have the $5 dealer add-on for any tournaments that they have. Well, the thing is, a lot of these players aren't realizing is this money doesn't go straight to that dealer that you give that money to. This goes to a dealer toke pool, which then gets divided among however many dealers sat down every time at that table when they switch, however many dealers work that day, you know, I mean, it gets all devised. So, I mean, yeah, it's a $5 toke, but I mean, most likely when you win at the end, if you tip, you know, a little more than $5, it's going to help out, you know, because
yeah.
That $5 is, you know, from each person's getting split among probably 40 to 60 different dealers, you know, so I don't know. I mean, I don't tip as much. I'm not going to, you know, lie. I'm a dealer. I'm not going to tip as much when I do the dealer add-on. You know, but I'm still going to add an additional tip if I win at the end.
All right. So, and what kind of percentage do you put on when you play? Just so that's a good answer for our question,
yeah.
I think.
Well, I'm a dealer, so obviously I tip way more than I should sometimes. But what I always say is take what you make, take out what you put into the game, just yours. So if you got pools with two or three other people, no. You just take out your one entry fee. And then a lot of times people say, as long as it's not a, you know, like $1.2 million or something, I usually say about 8 to 10%. Is what I'd say I tip on that.
Well, that's what I did. Recently, I won a sit and go at one of the local rooms, and I gave him 10% of what I won. So, yeah, that seems about right to me.
Yeah. You know, because you got to also look at it, you know, especially in those sit and goes. That's another thing people don't realize is that $5 add-on doesn't go to that dealer, even though that dealer is the dealer that dealt you that entire tournament.
Right.
And, you know, in my book, I view that he should get it, but that still goes to a toke pool. So a lot of players aren't tipping because I was, you know, at one of the poker rooms and I won one of the single tables and second place and third place just walked away. And I was like, wow, you know, and then I feel bad. So then I over tip because I see that this dealer just spent an hour and a half of his time, you know, and these guys are thinking, oh, he gets to keep the $50 from the dealer. I don't know. That goes to the house. So he only made that tournament. He only made the money I tipped him,
so,
you know?
So is it like, do you think that maybe the house then, and that's sort of like a misrepresentation? I mean, if the house is making the money, then that they're labeling it dealer to make you feel bad and make you tip the dealer, when actually it's not going to the dealer, it's going to the whole house, right?
Well, no. It is going to the dealer. It's going to a dealer tote pool.
But it's going to the pool.
Yeah, it's going to a pool. It's not going to that individual dealer.
Right. That individual dealer spent an hour and a half
dealing in the single tables.
Everyone else
is
getting a piece of that sit and go that they didn't sit at.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so in that instance, that's what I'm saying. That's where I disagree, is when it comes to single tables, if they're going to do that, I believe that $50, if all 10 players put the five in, should go to the dealer.
Right.
Now, in the tournament, I totally understand, because there's multiple dealers that are going to be dealing to you in a multi-table tournament.
Right.
You know, so that's understandable for that money to go to the tote pool. But, you know, all different houses run different things. You know, I don't know exactly how some of the houses run. That's just what I heard, you know, so you can't even really go upon that. But
okay. Well, I know last time you were on, we asked you if there were any obnoxious stories from when you were out there. Anything happened while you were at the series this year that you want to share with us? And I know you already got the dealer of the year thing, so you're not going to lose it by telling us. Any players that we might have heard of giving you any trouble or anything?
Well, I mean, all the players always give dealers trouble, and usually the pros are always the ones that give us the most trouble, you know, because they look at it like they know the whole game, they know everything, yeah, you know, yeah. And that's about the only issue that I really run into, honestly, is I might sometimes butt heads with a few of the pros or the people that believe they're pros,
right?
You know, so, but I'm also one of those dealers, I'm not going to let someone take over my game, you know, and I'm going to tell you, hey, I got it, you know. Like, Min the Master. I had an incident in the main event with him. I apparently was dealing too fast, which I guess you're not supposed to do.
Wow.
So I got told by him I needed to slow down.
Oh, my God.
And the way he said it to me, I took it insultive because he said a few other things with it. Uh-huh. You know, well, at that time, I decided to spar back. And I just simply said, okay, well, I'm not going to make a mistake, sir. You know? And it just kind of went back and forth. And he's like, oh, you're so perfect. And I was like, no, I didn't say I was perfect. And he's like, oh, but I asked the table behind you when you go there if you make a mistake. And I said, go ahead, sir. You can ask him. You know? And it was just kind of funny because, like, me and him, you know, I think it opened both of our eyes up to, okay, he's just trying to ask me to slow down because, yes, he put $10,000 on the line. And he doesn't want his ace of spades to be flipped. Right. Well, the thing is he doesn't understand. If I slow down, I'm going to flip the card.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because one of my, Bob Smith, one of the floor supervisors, I had told him what had happened because I was a little, you know, upset. I was like, wow, you know, I didn't think that I should have got scolded. I felt scolded, but
right.
Probably not really, you know, so I told him about it. Well, then a few minutes later, I guess he ran into Min and he told Min, quit giving, you know, Jenna grief. And Min's like, oh, she's such a good dealer. She's such a good dealer, but she's too fast for tournament. She's too fast for tournament. She need to deal cash. She need to deal cash. And I was, and you know, so I mean, oh, I knew that he wasn't trying to insult me, but I think that just the way it came off, you know,
yeah.
And the fact that a lot of times when pros make comments to dealers, it's not usually nice.
Yeah.
So I think automatically I was already ready for him to say something mean or nasty, you know. But it was just kind of funny how everything played out, right, you know, because, I mean, he's a good guy. You know what I mean? And I totally see where he was coming from. You know, it just was a miscommunication at the time, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mr. Smith, Bob Smith, my friend, corrected him and let him know. So,
well, from now on, anybody gives you any grief, you could just say, you know, I am World Series of Poker Dealer of the Year.
The first one ever. The
first one ever.
Ever?
They're going to name the damn award after me. Don't give me
the
any
Phillips
grief.
Award.
Well, Jenna, thanks for coming in. We know you've been busy, and it's great to catch up with you while you're here in the Tampa Bay area. And good luck. We'll be looking for you on TV, on ESPN for the final table. So
yep.
Have fun.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Want Rays news from real Rays fans? OutsPerSwing.com. OutsPerSwing.com has interviews, analysis, and all the breaking news for your Tampa Bay Rays. Are you looking for up-to-date news on the most exciting team in baseball? Check out OutsPerSwing.com. That's OutsPerSwing.com.
This is Joe Seabock, and you're listening to Any Up.
Today's Hand of the Week brought to you by the good folks at the Poker Whiz Wheel at PokerWhizWheel.com. 169 starting hold'em hands, all in one easy-to-use wheel, Chris.
Yes.
And so today's hand, a little different. We like to have fun with the Hand of the Week every once in a while, right?
Right.
So the instructional value, maybe there's some in there, but trust us, there's a payoff here that you'll have you talking.
Now, will the Poker Whiz Wheel take the whole Hand of the Week this week, or do I need to say something?
I think the Poker Whiz Wheel is going to help us more this week, because we finally got away from those big blind, small blind kind of battles that we've been doing the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
Now we've got some players.
Okay, cool.
All right, so we'll see what we do here.
All right.
Comes from our good friend Brian, who goes by Static Cling on the forums. All right, and this is from a 1 plus 25 cent sit and go. So, you know, the best players on full tilt here. All making sure that they don't lose that dollar they put in. So we know what kind of play we're going to get here, right?
Right.
All right, so let's look at the stacks here.
Stiptic pencil. You cut yourself shaving there. You need to stop the bleeding. Stop the bleeding in the poker room with
yeah,
stiptic pencil.
I don't want to get blood on the whiz wheel here. All right, so levels are 20-40 here, and it looks like most people are around the starting 1500. But a big chip stack in seat 9 at 4,000, and then another one about 2,000.
Yeah, that's clearly that seat 5 and 7 went all in, and seat 9 called and tripled up on the first hand. That's what that is right there.
Under the gun folds, on the gun plus one folds, and now it gets to us.
What do we have?
Ace of diamonds, queen of diamonds.
That's a nice hand.
Now, Todd Brunson, you said, now has come around to to liking this hand, even though his father doesn't, right?
Right, exactly.
Of course, it's suited, so that makes all the difference in the world.
Oh, yeah, that's 3% more to liking of it.
So. And I spun around the poker whiz wheel, and it is blue everywhere, and blue, of course,
is awesome. Blue chip.
Blue is what you want to see when you spin the whiz wheel around.
Finally, we have a hand that the whiz wheel likes.
Yep.
The whiz wheel is shaking.
Absolutely.
The whiz wheel is shaking. It is so excited.
So it wants us to raise. It wants us to get in there and mix it around. So.
And I have a feeling we're going to.
And we're going to be the first one in. So you got to raise, right? Regardless
Absolutely.
Of what you got. But that helps that you've got a nice premium suited hand here.
Not going to limp with ace-queen suited.
Big chick.
Big chick. Big suited chick. She's wearing a suit. She's got a zoot suit on. Big suited chick.
All right. So again, the big blind is at 40 bucks. So we bump it to 140.
That's all right. A little more than three and a half. That's not bad. I'll go with that.
All right. Now, Daniel Grimes has been doing 2.5.
Yeah, well.
I like 2.5 to 3. I think we probably put some unnecessary chips in here is what I'm thinking.
Well, maybe, but that's also small ball poker for like multi-table $10,000 buy-in tournaments. That's not $1 sit and goes.
You can't extrapolate it down to the dollar sit and go.
Yeah, these guys aren't going to fold. So, you know what I mean?
No, but all the more reason to not bet as much, because then you're not risking as many chips as you have to get the same effect. If they're not going to fold, why bet more?
Because you know you're going to get more with a solid hand.
Yeah,
you
but
want to win
get,
more with
you're
your solid
get paid
hands.
Off when you hit. That's how these people play.
I disagree
right?
with you, and you don't play Nolan
shocking.
Holden. So
shocking.
That's why I disagree with you in the Negreanu video. I totally knew it was fake.
All right, so we raised to 140. The next player calls, and then we've got a fold, and the small blind calls, and the big blind folds.
Okay.
All right.
So we're three-handed.
Yep. Flop comes, 5 of spades, 10 of spades, 8 of hearts.
All right, it's very good.
Top, second, top.
Yeah, we got...
Is that a new term I can make? Top, second, top?
Top,
no?
Second, top. That's weird.
Doesn't make it...
That is weird.
No.
Just sounds like you're sneezing. Doesn't sound like you're saying anything.
And, of course, we missed all of our diamonds, so our suited advantage is out the window.
Right. So let's look at this flop. We have 2 to Broadway, 2 to a wheel, and 2 to a flush. So the next card could give us a lot of trouble. So we're going to want to bet, probably, right?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And it's checked to us, so the question, though, is not whether we should bet.
But how much?
But how much?
Well, I think you probably want to bet about pot here. I would bet around pot just because... You know, I want to give them the least amount. I mean, I want to overbet the pot because, you know, who knows what I'm up against. But, you know, I want to get some information without. And I have enough chips, too. You know, I started with 1,700. So I'd probably bet around 400 here.
All right. All right. Static bets 460, which is right around the pot size, too. I did the math quickly there. And that seems to be pretty good here, I think. Because, like you said, you get a lot of draws you want to make people pay for here.
Right, right.
So he gets one player out of the way, and then the... Small blind calls, though.
Just a call. No, that doesn't leave him with much either, does it?
He started with 1295 before this, so 14,
so he has about 700
so
left.
600, so probably about 600-700 left, yep.
Yeah, so that's an odd call. What could he possibly be calling with that? If he's calling 50% of a stack, not 50%, but a good chunk of it, you would think he would just either shove here or fold.
Well, I always hate the check and then the call to bet behind. Because you're not getting any information, really. Which means either he's got a monster or he's on a draw, usually, right?
Well, that to me, it screams draw. Because why wouldn't he, if he had something here, what's he going to do the next street? You know what I mean? The bet's going to go up to about what he has anyway. So you might as well just shove. So to me, it sounds like a draw.
Yeah, and the problem, again, going back to the low-level dollar here, is that you would think that somebody wouldn't be committing this many chips on a draw, leaving himself so short.
Yeah.
But in these small tournaments, you know, people play weird. So,
did he send in some what he thought was going on in the hand? Do you have any information there?
Well, yes, exactly. He says doubly deuce, who is the opponent here, is left with 695 units. He says this is important information. I'm a little worried that my queen kicker might be beat. Ace king, ace ten are possible hands. Yeah, I'm not so sure on that. But this player has not shown any hands. Has not won a hand yet.
So I think he's
unknown.
So by what he's saying there is that he's afraid of a smooth call with the ace king. But I doubt that someone would smooth call those kind of draws out there.
Yeah, I'm thinking again, people with that kind of flop, unless they've got the backup to go with it with the suits, you know, they have to be betting out. They can't let people have free cards. So I'm not anticipating an ace here.
All right. So then, what's the turn? Because I think we're both putting him on a draw here.
All right. Turn is a nine of clubs.
Okay.
And now our opponent, who with his 695 left, checks.
Sounds like
further validating our draw theory.
Yeah. Either that or a monster, but I'm pretty sure it's a draw now.
All right. So Static Cling takes it all the way down the dreaded 15 seconds left to act, and puts out a bet of 694.
No, wise guy, huh?
Now remember, his opponent started this turn with 695.
Yeah,
so he's leaving him bust there.
That's why I said wise guy.
Yeah, I know,
because I grasped that.
Yeah, I was making sure our listeners grasped it as well too.
So the guy has $1 left.
Or that's if he calls.
If he, now, calls.
He takes the clock all the way down and then decides to call.
What? Called. So do you think he called not realizing that he wasn't all in?
Well, no, and here's the thing is, I could see that kind of play if we're on the bubble, but we're nowhere near the bubble here. So, you know, I guess you're just trying to get as much fun as you can out of a dollar or a quarter tournament.
That is so weird. Oh, my God.
So, of course, Static goes, calls? Leaves himself to one chip? Okay, that's a little odd. We are now both committed to this hand.
You think? All right, so what's the river?
All right, the river's a five of clubs.
Okay.
So all the draws miss there.
If he had a five in his hand, which I doubt, you're in trouble. But other than that, I think you're good.
More likely to have a five than something else, but even that doesn't make sense, I don't think.
I just don't think he'd have a five.
I think we won this, and of course it doesn't matter because he's got one chip left.
You're not going to fold.
So he's not going to push us off this hand, I don't think. And of course he checks. You're
going
to have to pry that dollar out of his dead hand. But Static tries his best. He bets 40. Can you actually slide down to one?
No.
Or do you have to,
no,
you have to at least bet 40
that's
there?
The min bet,
that's
so
true.
He had to bet 40.
Yeah.
slide down to one.
All right, so doubly deuce takes all the time he can. And folds.
No.
He folds.
Oh, my God.
Folds, Static Link says.
Does it say doubly deuce, or does it say off deadline?
Oh, you're funny. You're funny.
Because I seem to remember someone else who had one chip one time, some host of some podcast, and he 18'd up with it.
That's true. I did 18 up, but the difference was I didn't choose not to put my chip in. Some other little idiot clown out there got cute with the little numbers and left me with that.
Idiot clown.
And then I came back and showed him who was boss, at least for a couple orbits.
So this guy folds with $1 left.
Folds instead of clings as at least hope that I whiffed and his hand may be good. Why leave yourself with one unit? I have no answers for you, Static. I have absolutely no answers. That makes no sense.
Unbelievable. So apparently, he actually had a little conversation with this guy afterward, too. Do you have that with you? Because I heard it. I remember this hand.
He does. In fact, Static Clank says that he was going to send this hand into Antioch Magazine, which he did. And then he wished the best of luck to Doubly Deuce, hoping he would win, which we know is a fake.
Yeah.
Because I probably wanted him to finish second, but.
Unbelievable. So apparently he clearly had a draw there and didn't get there. So, oh my God. How do you not even just push in a dollar and hope that your hands, you know, maybe the other guy was bluffing too. Who knows?
Well, our hero got him back later on and busted him four hands later when the straight killed his pair of eights.
Excellent.
He says he almost wish he would have won. His stack would have grown by 500% from one to five. And then, of course, our hero went on to win the sit and go.
Excellent.
And not only that, but he won a poker whiz wheel.
Excellent.
And he sent us an address and everything, so he's all ready for it.
Yeah, he
so
knows.
So we'll pop that in the mail tomorrow. Great poker whiz wheel. And if anybody else wants a poker whiz wheel, you can send us a hand of the week at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or go straight to pokerwhizwheel.com and buy one yourself.
And we have ads on our website, too. You can check them out there. All right. Well, another good show. I want to thank Jenna for coming down and entertaining us. All right, so I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we will see you at the table. Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.